Welcome to a brand new edition of Problematic Women. I'm Virginia Allen.
And I'm Kristen Eichkimmer.
And I'm Lauren Evans.
The founder of Twitter, Jack Dorsey, has endorsed X as freedom technology. That's a big move.
Yeah, I mean, what is Twitter again? I'm just kidding. It's X now. I feel like that's my common lingo. Like, I don't call it Twitter anymore.
X, formerly Twitter.
Yeah, it's weird.
I can call it X, but it weirds me out to not call them tweets.
Yeah.
To call them posts. And especially when you're reposting, it's just so confusing.
Like a repost.
I still call them tweets, but yeah, in my head, it's X. It's a weird thing.
Like going back and forth. I feel like if they made a movie of this transition between Twitter and X, like the last scene would be this screenshot of Jack Dorsey praising X and like nice music would play.
Or like Jack Dorsey tear falling down slowly.
Because Elon hearted it. So yeah. That's nice.
Well, that's really exciting to watch what they're doing. I mean, they're not only protecting free speech, but they're taking it seriously in ways of trying to make it a platform that people will really enjoy and will want to use.
Well, and it's working. I think initially everyone was like, oh my goodness, this is actually going to work. And so far, they've of course had hiccups.
Yeah.
But it seems to be working.
Well, and you add on top that TikTok is banned. I mean, where are all those people going to go?
Yeah, true. Well, honestly, I hope they go outside.
I hope they read a book.
Yeah.
No, I hope they go to Twitter and they follow Heritage on Twitter.
That true. Yes. Yeah. Do that and the Daily Signal and Problematic Women on Instagram.
In that order.
And then go outside.
And then go outside and read your book.
All right, Kristen, what do we have queued up on today's show?
For sure. Up on today's Problematic Women, the Boy Scouts are changing their name. And the biggest losers, the Girl Scouts. Plus, Columbia University has canceled its graduation because of the pro-Palestine protest. But the protests apparently don't even know how to spell Palestine. And young women are considering physician-assisted suicide. We explain. And as always, we'll be crowning our Problematic Women of the Week.
Each week on Problematic Women, we sort through the news to find those stories that are of particular interest to conservative-leaning or problematic women, those whose views and opinions are often excluded by those on the so-called feminist left.
If you are a problematic woman or just someone who supports strong, independent women, please consider supporting us by leaving a review or rating on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen and encouraging others to subscribe. It really does make a difference.
All right, let's get to it. The Boy Scouts of America is changing its name to Scouting America with a focus towards inclusion. The organization, they issued a press release on Tuesday saying Boy Scouts will rebrand to Scouting America, reflecting the organization's ongoing commitment to welcome every youth and family in America to experience the benefits of scouting. The change will go into effect on February 8th, 2025, the organization's 115th anniversary. What do you all think about this name change, Boy Scouts to Scouting America?
I think it's confusing. Like, what? We said this at the beginning. What's going to happen to the Girl Scouts? And as a former Girl Scout, I don't remember. I think I was a junior or somewhere in between. Those are some really formative years, and you're a very vulnerable, you know, young woman or young man during those times. So I'm not excited to see what happens. I'm hopeful that it remains just, you know, all men, because that's a really important, you know, group of individuals. And again, formative years, like we've seen chivalry kind of die over the last few years. Like, hopefully this is an outlet where they can learn, you know, those types of behaviors. But yeah, not super exciting. Scouting for America is kind of a weird name. And with kids involved, it's kind of an awkward thing to call that group.
It's been known for so long as the Boy Scouts.
Yeah, so I don't know. I don't feel good about it.
Well, and it's a shame because kids need time and space with their own gender that they can experience things, right? There's when you're a young girl, it's so scary when your body is changing and you don't feel comfortable in kind of yourself, that to be around other women, right? And I'm sure boys go through that same thing. And to take that away from kids, I mean, nobody is more pro girls should be doing science and getting dirty. And, you know, I think gender roles are really important, but that doesn't mean that a little girl can't go out in the woods and start fires and, you know, have fun like that. But at the same time, girls most of the time, number one, don't want to do that. But number two, you can do that in a way where you can still keep girls together and you can empower girls about what makes them so powerful and empower their femininity and empower them to be the best woman that they can be. In the same way, I think, Kristen, this is what you're getting to, in empowering men to be the best man they can be. And that is, while both goals are very noble and both goals, I think, have a lot of similarities, right? You want to be honest. You want to have integrity. You want to be kind. You want to be patient. You want to, you know, want what's best for the world and try your hardest. But there's also different things in that, right? With a man, you want to be tough. You want to be strong, and while also embracing like a softness. And I think it's the almost the opposite for a woman, where you want to be tough, but you also want to be soft. Mm. So I think it's really a shame and such an overcorrection for the Boy Scouts to now just be like, okay, well, it was unfair for us not to let girls in, so we're going to let everybody in, and now we can have trans kids and whatever, and it's just a big blanket. But you're really harming kids and giving them less opportunity through this move.
Well, and they've been letting women actually in for 5 years, and they've been letting gay youth in since 2013 and gay leaders in since 2017. But this is obviously a real flagship of when you're branding as not Boy Scouts that, oh yeah, and we happen to also allow girls, but your branding
as
is
like
intended.
They're welcome. It's not like one girl who's like, oh, there's no Girl Scout troop, can I please have some community? It's like, no, like, we want to have everybody together.
Exactly. And I was thinking about this because on initial thought, it's like, okay, they're doing this as virtue signaling, it's woke, they're under pressure from the far left. And I was like, no. I actually think that this is all driven by money. So during COVID-19, it was a really, really rough season for the Boy Scouts and for the Girl Scouts. The Associated Press reports that membership for the Boy Scouts dropped significantly. So it dropped from 1.97 million in 2019 to 1.12 million in 2020. So that's a 43% plunge in just a one-year period, and it had then continued to fall further. And so you think about, okay, if you're going to try and bring more people in, you're going to get more membership, you have to expand the audience, you have to expand the crowd. And I think there's also opportunity to get a larger donor base if you're appealing to a very far left specific agenda that's targeting LGBTQ, that's targeting feminist groups. And so for them, I think in many ways, you can just look at it from a business perspective of, oh, this is a move that, yes, is smart and also maybe that they had to make, quote unquote, had to make in order to maybe stay out of bankruptcy of like, okay, we have to start attracting more women into our program. And I think that the fallout from this, what we could see is that the biggest losers in this are the Girl Scouts, because traditionally you look at what happens when something that is all male and geared towards male all of a sudden opens up to women. We saw this with colleges that were all males colleges, that they very, very quickly were filled with women. Well, the reverse doesn't happen with Girl Scouts. Right now, the Girl Scouts is still holding that they only accept girls. Now they do accept transgender youth, so boys who identify as girls, but they are holding that, you know, we just accept women. And even if they changed their policy, though, and they started accepting boys, I don't think we would see the reverse, because what we saw with women's colleges is that when women's colleges opened up to men, not that many men want to go to something that was just established as something for women. But girls don't have that same qualm about jumping into something that was originally established for men.
See, I completely disagree, Virginia. I think if you look at that drop, I would actually probably put the drop more on COVID than I would on money and like having the Boy Scouts, because we can't even get kids to go to school anymore. Mm-hmm. Why would they be doing extracurricular activities? I really think these organizations are run by nonprofit staffers who care more about this woke moral agenda than they care about the population that they serve.
It's kind of, I feel like, almost both. I see both of these sides.
Kristen thinks it's both.
Let me just meld these together. But the first thing that I thought, I didn't even think about the money aspect, and you're so right. We're kind of in this generation where it's like, how do we find a quick fix to something? Oh, let's expand what we're offering so we can expand our donor base, instead of working hard to get from the traditional donors or even expand to new donors that might support the Boy Scouts, which I'm going to continue calling that, the Boy Scouts.
You know, because, I think everybody will.
Yeah. What's next? Are they going to stop selling popcorn? Like, no. But What I find most discouraging, and I totally see, like, COVID, totally see that being a drop-off, even though both groups go outside more than any other, well, I guess outside of sports, more than any other kind of group
But
thing.
I don't think it has anything to do with, like, the actual groups not wanting to meet. We can't get kids to go to school, right? The amount of kids not showing up to school at post-COVID, even when everything's, quote-unquote, back to normal.
Yeah.
Kids are just used to, like,
being home
and not doing anything. And I think that's a bigger problem when it comes to this. And that's why it's such a shame that these organizations are going down the toilet.
Yeah.
Where it's like, we need, these kids need structure more than any time other before.
Mm-hmm.
I was even talking to a colleague here at Heritage, and they're like, even my kids don't want to go to school anymore.
Mm.
Which is crazy.
That, I mean, yeah, no, like the social, we have cut off the social scene, you know, for a lot of these young kids. They would rather be at home on their screens, hiding behind something.
Yeah.
And we see that, you know, kind of with these Palestine protests, they'd rather, you know, be covered. And maybe that's strategic, but like maybe it's also because they're uncomfortable with, you know, really putting their face behind something. What I'm most worried about, kind of pivoting back to this topic, though, is, you know, Girl Scouts, Boy Scouts, totally different codes of honor. And I just looked them both up. And I remember I used to hold my three fingers up and like.
You were a Girl Scout?
Yeah, my mom was a leader too.
My honor.
Yeah.
I try to serve God
in
my country.
Yeah, and then to help people at all time and to live by the Girl Scout law. And
I
my mom, made sure I knew that. but the Boy Scouts, I just looked theirs up really fast. And it's focused on staying physically strong, mentally awake, morally straight. That's kind of, you know, what we see a lot with the differences between male groups and female groups. The female group, it's all about community and it's all about love and, you know, loving yourself, but also others. And for guys, there is usually an element kind of strung in there with like the physical and mental toughness. And I love that. I think that's great. That's how you form strong young men. And also, it's really encouraging because we've got a military problem and let's go inspire some of these guys to maybe, you know, go off into the military in the future. So that's where my biggest concern is when we're melding all of this together, where we're creating a utilitarian group of people that aren't focused on the mission and more focused on virtue signaling. And I mean, how often do you think about the Roman Empire? Because that's, I'm getting a little nervous.
Yeah, well, no, I mean, I think you look at the situation and it in order, whether you're looking at it from they are furthering the woke agenda or you're looking at it from a money perspective, they recognize we need more members. And how do you find more members? You open it up.
It's just the easy solution that doesn't take that much work. And that's sad. Like, I'd rather do the hard thing right than. But, you know, that's where we're at right now.
That's where we're at.
Got to light a fire under some people.
I don't think I'll be putting my children in Boy Scouts. So I can tell you that. Or Girl Scouts, for that matter. But, you know, we'll see. We'll see what happens with these organizations. It'll
Hopefully
be interesting to see how they shake out. But stay tuned, because up next, we're going to circle back to what Kristen just commented on some follow-up to all the craziness around these protests, these pro-Palestine protests on college campuses that have even resulted in Columbia University canceling their graduation. More on that in a moment. But first, did you know over 90 clothing brands support abortion? Over 90. Well, Culture of Life 1972 is the very first pro-life clothing line. It started by a mom and her three daughters. They started it at their kitchen table. And Culture of Life 1972 has donated over $50,000 in 5 years of business as their customers shop dresses, pants, tees, jewelry, and gifts. And that $50,000 goes to support life from the moment of conception until life's final breath. Culture of Life 1972 is clothing with a conscience. Their clothing does not only give back to crisis pregnancy centers, but it also acts as a reminder to pray for all 50 states to return to that Culture of Life as we are now living in a post-Roe v. Wade world. And if you use the code Problematic Women, all running together, one word, Problematic Women at checkout, you will save 10% off your entire order. And also make sure that you're following Culture of Life on Instagram. That's COL1972 official to make sure that you learn about their flash sales and different deals and promotions. They put all of that on their Instagram, and you can also just see all of their beautiful clothing and dresses. So if you're in need of spring or summer dresses, make sure that you check out Culture of Life 1972.
The pro-Palestine protests at Columbia have led the university to cancel its main graduation. That is insane. The school issued a statement Monday saying, "We have decided to make the centerpiece of our commencement activities our class days and school-level ceremonies where students are honored individually alongside their peers rather than the university-wide ceremony that is scheduled for May 15th.
Columbia University has been the epicenter of the pro-Palestine protest. Last week, around 100 people were arrested during protests on campus.
Well, social media has just been lighting up over these constant protests, over what's been happening at Columbia University. And it was really funny to see that SNL did a sketch that highlighted from the perspective of an African-American father what some parents might be thinking about these pro-Palestine protests. The clip is just so funny, we have to play a portion of it.
I think it's just great, you know, it's wonderful. Nothing makes me prouder than young people using their voices to fight for what they believe in.
Wow, that's very encouraging.
Yeah. Alphonse, your daughter must feel so supported when she's out there.
What's that now? when whose daughter is out there?
At the protest.
No, man, you bugging. Alexis Vanessa Roberts better have her butt in class. Mm-hmm. Let me find out she in one of them damn tents instead of the dorm room that I pay for.
Wait, I thought you were in favor of the student protest.
Brother man, I am supportive of y'all's kids protesting. Not my kids. My kids know better. Shoot, Alexis Vanessa ain't crazy.
So given this video, really, really funny SNL sketch, what we saw even recently with, we talked about last week, the fraternity brothers at North Carolina University that held up the American flag so it wouldn't touch the ground when there was all the controversy of removing the American flag and putting up the Palestinian flag, and then the protesters trying to take it back down, and those guys held it so it wouldn't touch on the ground, the American flag, that is. What do you all think that the implications could be for America? Because I'm a little bit encouraged in seeing the response that this feels different than we've seen with some other protests, where we're actually seeing a little bit of a stirring of more pushback, more patriotism, and more people just being like, hey, this doesn't make sense. And actually, I don't agree. But do you all think that we could actually see some unity come out of these protests, that people start abandoning this really, really far left, and I mean, even beyond far left, I mean, it's straight Marxism, essentially, ideology that we're seeing pushed by these radical groups?
I think these groups think this is Black Lives Matter 2.0, mm-hmm. and that everybody's behind them, and there's all these warm and fuzzies, right? And I think they're having a rude awakening that the American people see this, and they're like, no, these are just riots, and these are kids in tents. This is not productive. This is not helping anybody. I think most Americans don't feel any sort of sympathy for these kids. They're like, oh, you pay $90,000 to go to school and you are spending your time in tents, and now kids don't get to graduate and people feel unsafe on campus. So I think these leftists are really overplaying their hand. And I think it's just a matter of time until everyone gets bored with them, and then they'll all go away, right? There's not going to be some big struggle or some big kind of flashy ending. It's just going to be like, oh, we're not getting any attention. I don't want to sleep outside anymore. And then, you know, they'll go home.
It literally just spoiled people that are, you know, to the SNL skit.
Oh, my goodness. So
I don't know how I'd react if my kid was doing it. I know how my parents would react if I was doing this. They'd be super upset. I can't wrap my head around the protesters. I don't know, to answer your question, if there's going to be unity coming out of this. I think there's going to be a lot of forgiveness and maybe some frustration with that forgiveness. But if there's one thing history has taught us, it is do not mess with the Jewish people. Like,
Literally, in general,
they typically, they're there, you know, like, and they're proud of their heritage. They are proud of what they've overcome. This is nothing like some of the other tests that they've faced. So I don't know what this is going to look like outside of there's going to be a lot of forgiveness. For parents out there that are watching their kids, and in some cases, you know, these kids are acting ridiculous. I think maybe they see how scary it is that these professors have so much pull over their students. you flagged earlier something about how a UNC professor was holding grades until, you know, students were not expelled or suspended, or I don't remember exactly what it was. But that, if nothing else, shows the hands of the professors and shows that their students are being indoctrinated and not educated if they're going to dig their heels in and support things like that. So I think there's going to be a lot of forgiveness. I think there's going to be another kind of reawakening where parents are like, why am I sending my kid to this school where they're anti-everything? And kind of like what we saw in that SNL skit, people are waking up. They're like, not my kid. My kid's not doing that. And then I don't know if you saw the Instagram reel earlier, but it's the New York parent coming home from their kid getting expelled from Columbia. And he's like, you better pay this off. And he's like yelling at the kid because you got to be... got to be smart. It was a funny skit. It was not real.
Well, and even I was listening to NPR this morning. I listened to their Up First podcast in the morning because it's helpful to know how other news outlets, especially mainstream, are reporting the news. And they were talking about the fact that so many of the – and we touched on this last week – that so many of the individuals graduating that are supposed to be graduating this year, they didn't get a high school graduation because of COVID or prom. And now, I mean, they just want to walk across the stage. So, like, just give me one normal graduation, please.
Or experience.
Well, that was my favorite part of the SNL sketch. It was towards the end, and it was like, I drove an Uber. You know, I took every spare job I could.
Yeah.
I'm going to sit there, and I'm going to watch my daughter walk across the stage, and they're like, there's not going to be a graduation. And then the guy flips out. I thought that was so funny.
Yeah. Well, because, I mean, you think about the perspective of grandparents, aunts, uncles, parents, siblings, so many people sacrifice to see a kid get through college. And even just the sacrifice of traveling maybe halfway across the country. And then it's like, wait, you're telling me that a handful of opportunists and privileged kids at a university ultimately got graduation canceled for tens of thousands of other students. That's just not fair.
People just feel good when they have a megaphone in front of them, and it's kind of sad. It just, and like I said earlier, a lot of them are wearing masks or the, you know, things to cover their faces. So, like, what are we doing?
Yeah. Well, I mean, nobody's more pro college activism than I am, and I had so much fun being a college activist.
But what you did was very different, Lauren, than what we're seeing these kids do.
Like, there's a difference. Kids should, I mean, nobody should stand up for terrorists, but kids on college campuses should be taught how to be activists in a way of not stopping people from what they're doing, but in a way of letting their voices be heard, right? And there's so many ways that our country has a time-honored tradition of free speech that should be embraced, and it should be so you know, such an important part of learning about who you are and what you really believe. But this is just so not what that is. And the fact that people are trying to say that, sleeping in a tent and spray painting and barricading yourself in buildings, that is not protest. That is not protest. And it is a shame that these kids even can distort in their mind that somehow that is protest.
What have we seen from the Biden administration that's interested you all on this front about how they've responded?
Biden wants it both ways.
Yep.
He wants to say that, you know, this is not what America stands for, but he won't actually really push back against them because he's so afraid of this little woke part of his base.
Yeah, there's a lot of people that have said they are not going to vote for him because of him not being more aggressive with Israel. And honestly, like, let's see how this plays out. Let's see you actually do something, you and Kamala. Let's see you guys not laugh at the situation.
You mean Mamala,
yeah. Let's see you actually take action, actually think about a strategic solution here, and be the president of the United States.
Yeah.
Step up.
Yeah. Well, and it was interesting, Lauren, you flagged this for me, that Secretary of Education Cardona, that he was actually yelled at by pro-Palestine protesters as he was speaking out on the need for there to be civility on campus and for these protests not to get out of hand, and that the response from protesters then is just, they're not listening. They're just going to criticize him.
I think he's learning that you're only popular for as long as you give in to the woke mob.
And Biden, that is, or Cardona?
All of them. Yeah. Let's be real. All of them. They have given so many miles for an inch. And I don't know where we're going to go from here. But we need to have a responsible person rein some people in, say, hey, by the way, Iran's backing some of these terrorist groups that you're supporting. You know, Iran, which hates America. Let's educate. Let's not indoctrinate. Let's let people understand rational thinking. And maybe we point to some history, because for some reason there's all of these. Remember when history was like the major people made fun of? They were like, oh, you're a history major. That's not that's not the hardest thing. It's not engineering. Like, get rid of the underwater basket weaving and go back to history, man.
Well, and it's heartbreaking what's happening in Palestine, right? Like, there are people who are suffering under this terrorist regime in Palestine, and they are dying. And it is really, when you think about kind of what, in the way of like your humanity, it weighs on you. But the difference is these students trust what terrorists are saying and what terrorists are doing over a democracy, right? And the fact that they cannot separate that in their mind, and that they would rather listen to terrorist propaganda, I think shows you all that you need to know about these groups.
Well said.
Well, speaking of pulling back and reining in things that are out of control, let's talk about euthanasia.
Oh, God.
Yeah. This is a big topic.
Have you guys ever seen that one meme where it was like, my professor told me to do a presentation on euthanasia, and they did it on youth space in space Asia?
No. Oh, no.
That's awesome. And it was supposed to be on
euthanasia.
It makes me always think that.
Oh, wow. Well, it's interesting to see how this is a conversation, right, that has been going on for a long, long time. We're having it in America. In the Netherlands, they have rapidly embraced this. And our colleague here at the Daily Signal's editor-in-chief, Kate Trinko, she wrote a piece on this the other day. And Kate's article specifically highlighted the stories of two young women in the Netherlands named Jorlanda Fun and Zoraya Ter Beek. I think I'm pronouncing that correctly, but forgive me if I'm pronouncing it wrong. And so these two women have recently done media interviews explaining their respective decisions to pursue euthanasia, despite the fact that they're completely physically healthy. So I want to play a clip of a conversation and an interview that 28-year-old Ter Beek had with the Free Press. Take a listen.
Hello, my name is Soraya and I'm 28 years old. I live in the Netherlands, and recently my euthanasia request for my mental suffering got approved.
Okay, so Ter Beek, who you just heard, she's autistic. She suffers both from depression and borderline personality disorder. She does have a boyfriend, and she lives apparently in a nice home that she shares with her boyfriend and cats. Her psychiatrist told her, this is a quote, "There's nothing more we can do for you. It's never going to get any better." And so to that, she told the Free Press that those words were what triggered her decision to ultimately decide to end her life. And my opinion is that psychiatrist should be fired and not allowed to practice for telling a woman it's never going to get better. Hey, have you thought about physician-assisted suicide?
Oh, she needs a cat poster or something.
She has cats, but apparently that's not enough.
I don't know, very sad. Like, my heart broke looking at that and kind of reading more about her story, because I think we've all been, you know, the phrase that I've heard a lot lately is down bad. So a lot of people have been down bad lately. There's been a lot of craziness in the world. We've got, you know, some wars going on. We've got inflation. It's hard to, you know, it's hard. We've got some societal pressures on us that are also discouraging. But the answer is never, it's never going to get better. And I mean, maybe it's just my faith, maybe it's my family and my privilege. I hate using that word. But my parents, you know, like, very supportive, family very supportive. But I could never see myself responding like this. And it's just heartbreaking. So definitely sending some prayers up, because it's just scary. They're totally redefining what death means, and they're making it kind of cool and like almost a fad. And it's just going to be scary to see where this, you know, where this leads to. Pandora's box has been opened.
Mm-hmm. Well, it shows where the religion of the woke is, right? We were just talking about this, of how they can distort their sense of reality. And unpopular opinion, I actually do agree with the psychiatrist that it might not get better. And that's pretty much the only thing that's promised to us in the Christian faith, is that you're going to suffer here on this earth. But the promise in the Christian faith is that it gets better because the battle has been won, right? And mm-hmm. so when you don't have those types of guarantees, it is kind of looking down of like, why am I here? Why am I doing this? And it's so sad to see this. And it's so sad to not just see one person or two people. If you look at this person, this is an entire society that has embraced that idea of that this is it, and whatever, if it sucks, and just give up, right? No, like, we are called to suffer, and we are called to push through that, because we are called to know that it gets better.
Well, and Lauren, while I agree with you that at the same, while yes, circumstances are in no way guaranteed to get better in our life, and it could be that the circumstances that this person is in, that they're not going to improve. What can improve is our perspective on those circumstances, because mm-hmm. we have full control over how we view our life and the lens through which we view our life. So even under the hardest of circumstances, you can still pursue joy. You can still practice thankfulness. That's actually a muscle, practicing thankfulness, and it makes life way more enjoyable. But I mean, you see this all the time, right? I mean, this is a classic experience. If as a young person you have the opportunity to go on a missions trip to Africa or a third world impoverished country, and one of the most common takeaways you hear when people come back is they had so little, but they were so happy. And our circumstances can be insanely hard, but experience, when you read biographies of people that live through some of the most challenging situations like the Holocaust, mm-hmm. and how they, so many of those people still manage to find bits of gold within their daily life. And that takes discipline, it takes practice, and it's a choice. And to just surrender to, okay, yes, life is really, really hard, so how about you escape?
I mean,
that's terrible.
Yeah, and it's permanent. Like, we talk about this all the time with transgender, you know, related issues and the top-bottom surgeries. Like, those are, you know, permanent. But, like, there is, you know, some stuff that can be done. You can go back to being we see this with detransitioners. They, you know, were like, I was confused and I went back. But with death, that's really permanent. And not only that, but when you're thinking through this, like, I mean, you just brought up the Holocaust. Like, those people didn't have a choice to die or not. Like, they were forced into mm-hmm. those concentration camps. It was tragic, and we mourn that. So what does it look like for this woman's family? She's 28. She, you know, 30 is a huge milestone. And I've seen so many things on Instagram that are like, can we stop pretending like 20s are the like best years of your life and realize and finally accept that 30s and 40s are like when things are awesome? And I'm looking forward to my 30s, but like, I'm 28. I'm a totally different person now than I was 10 years ago. And I'm going to be a totally different person in 10 years from now. Like, I mean,
because life does change.
Life does change. Things get better. Things get worse. Like, yeah. There's no change is constant. And that's what's beautiful about it. And to Lauren's point, Jesus died for our sins. And what makes me really nervous and really sad is we're kind of getting into like the giver 1984, where there was a lack of religion. And I don't know, my hardest times in life have brought me the closest to the Lord, mm-hmm. and I would never trade those experiences for anything. Yeah. And yeah, you get depressed, and I mean, thoughts of suicide, for me, not seriously, but you know, there's always like, well, maybe if I didn't exist. Like, but that's where it should stop, mm-hmm. you know? And mm-hmm. that's where you should open your heart up and look up.
Yeah.
And they're kind of just canceling that. They're killing that vine.
Yeah.
And I'm just at a loss for words, and I really hope God is going to act in some beautiful way, because we need some redemption here, man.
Yeah. Well, it gets into the, like, even if, like, in the Netherlands, they've made it legal, right? But that ethical question of, in my view, it's playing the role of God to decide, okay, I think I'm done with this life, and for society to say, yeah, if you're done, go ahead, end it, and we'll help you end it.
What an act of not self-love,
yeah.
Like just opposite self-care, self-love.
Well, I was even thinking in the piece that Kate wrote, one of these women has a brother, and one of the reasons that she gives for wanting to have be euthanized is that both her parents are having health issues. And I just think about, okay, so now you're going to leave your brother to have to care for ailing parents. Like, you're going to peace out. And I just really have a problem with that.
Yeah.
Like, you're not going to support your sibling. That's one of the gifts of having siblings, is to journey through the process of ailing parents together and support each other through that. So
tragic.
It's hard.
Freaking Europe, man.
Freaking Europe. Nice to visit. Nice to visit. You guys, you got croissants down real well.
That's Paris. That's France. That's a different country.
Mid-Southern Europe.
That's the base. That's where we like.
All right, well, stay tuned, because up next, we're going to crown our problematic woman of the week. Five days a week, two episode formats, one mission: to deliver the news you care about and analysis on the biggest issues facing America. The Daily Signal podcast brings you two episodes every day in the same podcast feed. Each morning, catch interviews with policymakers, leading experts, and conservative activists as we discuss some of the greatest challenges facing our country and offer solutions for a brighter future. And every weekday at 5 p.m., we bring you the top news of the day. These are the headlines you care about. Subscribe to the Daily Signal podcast wherever you get your podcasts so you never miss out on our morning interviews or evening news.
Now it is that time once again, my favorite time of the week, time to crown our problematic woman of the week. And the crown goes to
Erin Walsh.
Erin is the Senior Research Fellow for International Affairs at the Heritage Foundation's Asian Studies Center. She is one of the authors of a new project at Heritage called Chinese Handcuffs: How China Exploits America's Climate Agenda.
And I had the chance to sit down with Erin for a Daily Signal podcast interview this week and ask her about this new project, and specifically the ways that China is using this climate agenda, the green energy agenda, to its advantage and to put America into theoretical handcuffs. Here's what she had to say.
I mean, they have their own climate agenda, and the climate agenda is not a globalist climate agenda. Theirs is about China and about their regime security and stability, and that's what they care about. So when they come to conferences or they make commitments, it's rhetoric, because they're not in it for anybody but themselves. And the United States and Europe have actually believed China. Mm-hmm. And so instead of balancing out ours in terms of what our needs are, Biden has put us in a very difficult spot. He wants to double down and tie our hands behind our backs. And that's a problem.
So if you want to catch that whole conversation, you can do so on the Daily Signal podcast. That show is out Wednesday morning. But I just found this so interesting. And I think when you start to understand the fact that China is promoting solar panels, green energy, EV batteries, and not because they are concerned for the environment, because it furthers their economy, and it also puts America in a weakened national security state, as Erin went on to explain during our interview. And you realize, like, oh, there's a bigger picture here, and China is 100% acting within its own interests. And if America doesn't not only wake up to that, because I think America's, I mean, there's no way our political leaders aren't aware of that. But if they're not aware and then actually taking action, this puts America in a really, really dangerous position.
Victoria Coates, who mm-hmm. She's been involved with this project. She did a really cool demonstration at an event we had for this. And she put her fingers into those Chinese, like, finger traps.
Yes.
And I just thought that was such a good visual for kind of what is going on here.
It is.
So the point is that you have to put your own fingers in there, right?
It's a choice.
Right? It's that,
yeah.
That's what America's doing. They don't have to.
Yeah. And we're caught. We're caught right now. Yeah. But you don't have to be.
I thought it was really funny that Victoria went up there and she said, this is the only time I've ever specifically asked for an item to be bought in China for this event.
She's the best.
That's hilarious.
Her and Erin, man.
They're great. What a power power crew over there.
I really did enjoy that whole interview. I would really recommend you should go listen to that on the Daily Signal.
Oh, thanks, Lauren.
Oh, I meant about Al. I meant about Aaron. I'm just kidding.
Yeah. Aaron is fantastic. All right. Well, with that, that's going to do it for this week's edition of Problematic Women.
Join us next Thursday morning for a brand new edition. And in the meantime, please subscribe and share.
Conservatives need your support in the podcast world. So if you would, go ahead, leave us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, CastBox, wherever you like to listen. We would love to hear your feedback.
Have a great week. Problematic Women is brought to you by more than 500,000 members of the Heritage Foundation.
It is a product of the Daily Signal, produced by Lauren Evans and Virginia Allen. And be sure to follow Problematic Women on Instagram.
We produce Problematic Women in remembrance of our dear friend and former co-host, Bree Payton.